time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
I used to ask myself a lot of questions. Scott, you're at X-Con. How are you an Avenger? That doesn't make sense. But everywhere I go, people tell me the same thing.
Thank you, Spider-Man!
People still need help, Dad.
That's why we made this. It's like a satellite for deep space, but quanta.
Wait a minute. You're sending a signal down to the quantum realm. Turn it off. Now!
There's something I never told you.
This place. It isn't what you think. I can get you home. And give you more time. If you help me, so what's it gonna be, Ant-Man?
Well, the question is, will we actually get Natasha Wanton's take on Ant-Man versus the Wasp, Quantumania? It depends, really, on what the connection is with respect to, obviously, the link from Australia. Jessica Burtis is thankfully with us. I don't know, Jessica, have you seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania?
I have not yet, but Robin's declaration on the movie made me nervous because I really like the Ant-Man series.
Exactly. This is it. Well, if it helps, and Zondi, our good friend and author, of course, who missed you on Friday, actually did say that he liked it thoroughly. So on that basis alone, it's great. And Natasha did say it's not as bad as she thought it was going to be. So it goes. Anyway, let us move on, because obviously Richard Fitzwilliams is with us. We can reflect to a certain extent on the BAFTAs and my prediction that, yes, clearly All Quiet on the Western Front was going to actually do the business, which it did. To be fair, Richard did actually get the best actress for Tar spot on with respect to Kate Blanchett. Other sort of areas were in the zone. And we are actually sort of focusing on one of the winners today, which is a movie I do believe everybody should see. In fact, Richard, I honestly thought that you might have actually been looking ahead at my lesson notes and plans at the university. I really thought, what? Because this is a movie that I actually feel is so important that I will be screening it to my journalism students with respect to their own particular involvement. Of course, it is a BAFTA award-winning movie. I think it actually, if anything, yes, pleased that the CNN team actually got the award, pleased that obviously his wife, Ulia, and his daughter were actually there to obviously acknowledge it. But it is a movie that's so much of our time. It's not a movie, it's a documentary. And it's in the same documentary footsteps as the like of the great documentarians like John Grierson, like Robert Flaherty, the people who basically use the power of cinema to tell not just a story, but a real story.
Okay, so Alexei, I want to talk about something that we sort of touched on this morning. And you might hate this, but I really want you to think about it. If you are killed, if this does happen, what message do you leave behind to the Russian people?
Alexei Navalny has taken on the most dangerous job in the world, challenging the leader of the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin.
If I want to be a leader of this country, if I want to fight Putin, I have to organize people.
Война в Украине и война в Сирии. Я прекращу войну.
The Kremlin hates Navalny so much, they refuse to say his name.
I was banned from everything and blacklisted. But as I became more and more famous, I was totally sure that it will be problematic for them to kill me.
And boy, were you wrong.
Yes, I was very wrong.
Alexei Navalny arrives at this hospital in Berlin.
To have your dad, an opposition leader, being poisoned, it was literally like a book.
Come on, poisoned? Seriously?
We were so shocked. It's like Putin's leaving a signature on the crime scene.
It's kind of stupid.
Found a domestic assassination machine on an industrial scale.
Navalny will personally call his poisoners one by one.
Федор, это Навальный Алексей вас беспокоит. Хотел узнать, зачем вы хотели меня убить.
Oh my God, you ruined their day.
Navalny is stepping into a showdown with the Kremlin.
I want to go back and try to change Russia.
It's something worth fighting for.
Are you not scared, Alexei?
Поэтому бездействовать не надо.
Essential in so many ways. Enough of such stuff. Richard Fitzwilliams, Navalny, would you like to share with us your own particular thoughts on this?
Well, yes, Alex, I agree with everything you've said, and indeed it is an extremely important film, and indeed, talk about topical, this is someone who is truly courageous, and the regime that he is fighting at the moment from inside a prison, as we saw climactically in the documentary, is truly evil, as we've very, very clearly seen manifestations of this in the invasion of Ukraine and occupation of some of it. And indeed, there's no question, directed by Daniel Rojo, it won, indeed, Best Documentary. And you meet a truly remarkable political figure in Alexei Navalny, because one of the things this film does is it illustrates the hopelessness, at least currently, of opposition to Putin's regime in Russia. I mean, there's no question that Alexei Navalny is the focus for opposition, of support of opposition. He was allowed somehow or other to run for Moscow mayor in 2013 and got 27% of the vote. But subsequently, it was decided that he was too popular. And what do you do when you are a ruthless tyrant like Putin and someone is very popular? You eliminate them. And that was the main gist of this film, is that it centers around the assassination attempt using the lethal nerve agent Novichok. There's no doubt at all that the part of this documentary which reveals precisely how they attempted to kill Navalny and also how this is actually revealed to us is so sensational that it makes it somewhat of a thriller. I have to say that I'm actually not going to give a spoiler as to precisely what and how this is.
Richard, how bizarre. I mean, how bizarre, really, with respect to that, in terms of the song that Alex actually uses to underpin his video that he actually produces as a result of this extraordinary expose. As he said himself, the whole notion of, using his signature poison, how bizarre.
This If I had been told before I saw this that this particular scene was in the film, they investigate. This is the Bulgarian investigative journalist from Bellingcat, Christoph Grozev, and Maria Pevishik, who's also an investigator. Agents followed Navalny for 3 years, and they poisoned him on a trip to Siberia with Novichok. And subsequently, the same agent attacked the Skripals, and the daughter Yulia in Salisbury. And the way this plot was uncovered and precisely what was done and how it was done, it really, really is, I can only describe it as sensational, but I'm not going to reveal it because I urge everyone to see it and discover for yourself. I mean, what better way to find out how someone has attempted murder and attempted assassination than to ask those responsible.
Well, there was a chemist that obviously wasn't as bright enough as the other killers, who effectively had to turn around and say, well, yeah, we'd expected better. I don't know, if only they actually had a longer flight. I mean, again, the frightening nature of this.
You wouldn't want to save someone, would you, Alex? I mean, you know, the assassination being what it is, it has to work.
Well, again, the frightening nature of this, of course, is that I don't think any government is innocent in this. And I think there are lots of other instances that could be seen that also have nefarious, shady dealings going on. Natasha Wanton, Navalny, have you managed to catch up with us as yet?
No, I'm not, but it's definitely on the list. It was interesting listening to Richard just then, and I will be interested to see just how much we get to see. I always sort of, yeah, with investigative journalism, it's always interesting to see what they uncover, but at the same extent you understand that, you know, it's very limited and you never potentially in situations like this going to get the whole truth. So it'll be interesting to see how much they can show. And
but you'll be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I give this an undeniable 10 out of 10. I mean, it has to be a 10 out of 10 movie for me. Jessica, what about yourself?
I also haven't seen this, but I think it seems like a very important film. And I didn't really know much about him. So reading about this person was very interesting in a very sad way, but just such a brave human being. And the fact that Putin will still not even refer to him by name is, you know, very, very telling of just like that small like detail is like so telling. But I think that, especially now, I think that there is like at the beginning of the invasion of Ukraine, I think there was quite a lot of anti-Russian sentiments around against just your average Russian person that some people were experiencing. And I feel like it's important to kind of see people who are Russian people who also oppose Putin and aren't part of kind of the very negative things happening and are trying to change things. So I think that I want to watch this eventually.
Well, Alexei Anatolievich Navalny, a Russian opposition leader, lawyer and anti-corruption activist, organized anti-government demonstrations, ran for office to advocate reforms against corruption in Russia and, of course, against President Vladimir Putin and his government, who, as you rightly said, Jessica, avoids referring directly to Navalny by name. The filmmakers, of course, for Navalny did actually dedicate their BAFTA to the security risk journalist Hristo Rosev, obviously from Bulgaria. This story is continually unfolding. The ending, I will reveal, spoilers the heck with it, basically, it's very sad. Hopefully there will be a happy ending as the narrative continues to develop, because as we say, this story is unfolding, as indeed the tragedy in Ukraine is also unfolding from that point of view. And I do acknowledge that, yes, all governments, and I do emphasize that, have probably been guilty of various shenanigans, but to this extent, it is quite bizarre.
The bat, sweet singers in the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Ballet bridge blows the comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades, is that a Chevy 69? How bizarre. How bizarre, how bizarre. Destination unknown as we're pulling for some gas. Officially pasted poster reveals a smile from the back. Elephants and acrobats, lions, snakes, monkey. Billy speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. How bizarre. How bizarre, how bizarre.
Ooh, baby.
Stuck around TV news and cameras, there's choppers in the sky. Marines, police, reporters ask where, for and why. Billy yells, we're out of here. Cena says right on. Making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone. Jumped into the Chevy, headed for big lights. Wanna know the rest, hey. By the rights, how bizarre. How bizarre, how bizarre.
Okay.
And just to mention also that Courageous, despite having a loving family, returning to Russia with what that involved.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I felt sorry for the donkey, clearly, because who's going to feed him carrots these days in Germany? I mean, there's donkey and a small Shetland pony-sized horse as well. Not just a donkey, but a horse as well. I mean, I know this is it. So it gets you in all sorts of ways. But an outstanding film. Again, I really was mixed feelings. Pleased that it was rewarded, but at the same time, I'm not sure whether in that particular instance the BAFTA Awards tend to trivialise at some times, although at least it raises the point of view and certainly people can actually access it accordingly, as opposed to Bernard Cribbins, who didn't even get a mention, or Richard. So obviously on that basis alone, you have to turn around and resign from BAFTA, as indeed several folk have actually done.
Well, I mean, may I say, I couldn't understand your logic about possibly regretting why Navalny had won in the documentary category. I mean, surely it's a good thing it recognises
I just find awards in general can be sometimes they take away from the importance of the thing.
No. I mean, there we must simply disagree.
It's more than just a movie, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but no, that wasn't what I couldn't understand, because I do believe that award ceremonies, they're certainly fallible. Bernard Cribbins was one example, his omission. The other example at BAFTA was, I mean, Richard E. Grant's got the presence. What he didn't seem to have was as good a script as he could have had. And, you know, from that point of view,
Coming in a Batmobile, for goodness sakes.
It's all right. I mean, it was. Alison Hammond was a sort of Graham Norton-style figure interviewing celebrities. I just think that from a point of view of a script, they could have done better. But I did personally agree with almost every, or pretty well every choice, including I got right.
But it's all white, Richard. It's all white. Again.
I would also make the point that, well, yes, this is, it's a very diverse selection of nominees, and that included...
They're not winners.
Included Victoria, it included Danielle Deadweiler for Till, which, of course, it wasn't in the Oscars, and Viola Davis for The Woman King. But so far as the supporting actor and actress, I point out I got them. So, you know, it didn't go to the ones expected. It went to Barry Keoghan and Kerry Condon. So I didn't do too badly with the predictions.
Yeah, that's only because they misannounced the Kerry Condon one. I mean, she didn't get it in the first place. If you'd gone with the original winner, it would have gone to Kerry Mulligan. So let's face it, it's all about the signs.
I didn't see that because they didn't show.
No, because they edited it out, exactly. You know, they censored the whole thing. It's amazing they didn't actually use Novichok to actually do away with one of the things, honestly. Anyway...
I think that is perhaps slightly over-egging the pudding, don't you?
These awards can be very serious. Let's move back to Natasha, though, and find out, for the benefit of Jessica, whether or not she agrees more with Nzondi, and bless his heart, his own particular view that this is a superb Ant-Man movie, or is it a case of she's going down the line of Robin Pierce, who, as we know, gave it 3 out of 10, the worst movie ever, which again I think is harsh, even though Ant-Man's daughter, or Scott Lang's daughter, is probably somewhat irritating. After all, Natasha, what have you done recently to actually save the world? Eh? What have you done recently? You know, we saved the Quantumverse?
No, I have not saved the Quantumverse. I like to hope that I enrich the lives of many, many children on a daily basis. So that's my hope and my plan. It gets me out of bed in the morning. In terms of the film, I'll start with a little bit of an overview, because I'm not sure how much Richard might know about it. Jessica, I'm sure, has probably seen the trailer and things pop up everywhere. This is obviously our third Ant-Man movie. It's coming off the back of, obviously, the dusting and everything that's happened in Endgame. It shows Scott, he's doing very well for himself. He's sort of retired a little bit from the Avengers game. He's hung up his little Ant-Man suit and he's sort of focusing more on his family, or trying to focus more on his family. He's writing, he's sort of basking a little bit in this whole saving the world kind of title he's carved out for himself. Unfortunately, his once very young daughter we first met in the original Ant-Man movies has grown up quite considerably, and she's got quite a rebellious, spicy streak in her, shall we say. And we meet her again for the first time when Scott picks her up from jail after she's been involved in a series of protests. She's quite frustrated with her father. She feels like he's not doing enough to help people now. He's resting in his laurels.
Sort she of makes Greta Thunberg look mild by comparison, let's face it, Natasha.
To be fair, I found her far more tolerable than Michelle Pfeiffer's character, but I'll get to that a little bit later on. So we sort of have this family dinner. It all comes to a head that this is the first time that Cassie's been in jail. It all kicks off a little bit. You see what she's been working on. She's been sending signals into the Quantumverse.
Don't do it. As Michelle Pfeiffer would say, Janet Van Dyne, just don't do it. Stop it.
Everyone was really excited and proud, apart from Janet. Now, Janet obviously has been rescued from the Quantumverse and she's not spoken about it. Hope tries to pry and she sort of pushes her off at her daughter away. Like, I don't want to talk about it. And lo and behold, she has quite a traumatic response to finding out the signals there. Then in the process of trying to turn it off, they all get caught and dragged into the Quantumverse quite quickly into the movie, I might add. And thus begins this wonderful, fantastical adventure.
Honey, I shrunk the family.
Literally. I was surprised with how direct it kind of got to the point. It seemed like there was 5 minutes and then, whoa, suddenly we're in the Quantumverse. It was
Don't get me started on MODOK. Please do not get me started on MODOK.
But golden rule, Alex, don't be a dick. Remember, don't be a dick. It's never too late
Be a Richard if you want, but not a shortened version of that. Let's face it.
Exactly. No. Do you know what? There were parts on this movie where I think it was trying hard and it was good in places. And there were parts where it has quite an identity crisis. And I think that's symptomatic of a lot of Marvel movies at the minute, is that it doesn't know quite what it's trying to be.
It's the start of Phase 5.
I don't know if they sort of got Taika Waititi-itis and they're all trying to throw in these random sort of gags every once in a while to try and lighten the mood, because we can't have it too dark, but we can't have it comedy all the time, so let's have this really dark moment.
Natasha, do we actually go back to the whole notion, dial back and effectively use the entire plot line from Star Wars, the worst Star Wars movie possible, to actually put that in the microverse? Why?
It felt like a Star Wars movie a lot of the time when you're watching a lot of this stuff. I'm glad you brought that up, because it did. It felt like a Star Wars movie. It didn't feel like a Marvel movie. I mean, okay, the visuals were stunning. Richard, you would probably appreciate the visuals. Like, visually, it was very beautiful.
He likes his 3D, but does Richard?
Plot-wise, I mean, it was watchable.
That is an outrageous comment.
Avatar won at the BAFTAs. Avatar picked up one award for the BAFTAs, so for its classic, wonderful work there. So great stuff.
The only one it deserved, Alex. You're having snide attacks upon me in 3D, indeed. I think that's deplorable.
No. Everything everywhere all at once. Best editor. You know, the most important award you can have at BAFTA, basically. Anyway, back to yourself, Natasha.
I just felt like the script was just a mess in this movie. I think the actors tried to do what they could with a very jumpy, very mishmashy script.
Got multiple Kangs, though, and you got a great trailer. You got a great 2.5-hour trailer for the next series of Loki.
Right, that was pretty much what it is, let's be honest. It was a great 2.5-hour trailer for Loki season 2. The ending, I thought it was going somewhere, and then it had this sort of switch, like, we've got to do something happy, it's a family movie, and then it just sort of switched everything, and that really frustrated me as well.
Yeah, but he spits out the ice cream. He's going to eat the ice cream, then he spits it all out. And that's not good for product placement.
No, it's not.
Baskin-Robbins ice cream, he spits it out.
Oh, it's a very frustrating movie in a lot of ways. But it was good in places. I think it's the worst Marvel film ever? No, I don't agree with that criticism. I think Love and Thunder was far less watchable. I never want to watch Love and Thunder again. I could watch this movie again. So on that basis, I don't think it's as bad as some of the reviews have said. I think there are moments in here that are more memorable than the second Iron Man, for example, or moments in here that are more memorable than the second Thor film. So I don't wholly agree with Robin. As much as I love and respect him, I do agree in parts it was dull and it was a bit labored. I don't think it quite deserves a 3. I think that's quite harsh. I would maybe go to a 6, bearing in mind I gave Love and Thunder a 4. So that one's my least favorite. So I would probably go to a 6 in this one. I did find it very sad that there was only about 3 groups of people in the cinema to see this. That's probably quite telling of the public opinion on this one. Although we do have a large festival going on at the city right now for Fringe. We have a late Fringe going on. So that might also have had an impact onto the viewing. But I know that it's been getting a lot of abuse online, and I don't think the seats are going to be very filled, sadly, on this one.
Jessica, will you be one of the people who helps to fill the seats and actually keep Kevin Feige's job safe?
Maybe. I've been meaning to go to the movie theater a bit more often. But I think, I don't know, I'm just such a big fan of Ant-Man. He's such a fun hero. And the actress who plays his daughter was great in The Society and Detective Pikachu.
So I feel like there's some promise there, and Natasha's review made me a bit more hopeful. I don't know how I'll feel about it now with between Natasha and Robin, but I'll still go and see it for Ant-Man.
Richard, I mean, obviously you're a big passionate fan of big movies full of sound and fury signifying questionable results. Is Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, desperately something that you want to see following on from your excitement and joy of everything everywhere all at once?
Well, after, I mean, one thing Natasha has succeeded in doing brilliantly with that review, and I listened intently, and practically every button pressed was one that was telling me that this was not going to be a movie that I was going to be able to link into, just as everything everywhere all at once wasn't. But that's somewhat different. I mean, I'm obviously, I am a bit Marvel resistant, as you know, but I do see, I've probably seen the majority of them, but not necessarily if it's possible to avoid. So Natasha, I mean, I would also ask, if the worst of the Marvels gets four, what's the lowest you've ever given a movie or a movie you've truly disliked?
Oh, one and one, one or one is, yeah, I've given ones. Like, there have been some ones out there. There
I
have
think it was
been
Lawrence
some
of
terrible
Arabia got a
comments.
one from yourself, if I recall, Natasha.
No!
Shame.
Splendor.
Shame, shame,
Well,
No, but
never
there
mind.
are some movies that I have truly hated. There was a like an animated Beowulf a while back that I think Sean Bean did, and it was really, really terrible. That was a one for me. Like I've given ones just they're still watchable things in some of the Marvel movies, I think, regardless of what you go and see. Even as I say, Love and Thunder was a four. There was a couple of moments in there that was like that were watchable. It's just, yeah, it wasn't the greatest thing I've ever seen, and I don't particularly want to see it again, but it's okay.
You've succeeded in ensuring that I will avoid it.
Oh, well, never mind. At least you could look. I mean, how are you going to watch the new series of Loki without appreciating the big 2.5 hour trailer that actually comes up to set up the whole Kang multiverse? And as I say, don't get us started on MODOK, because that was again a character who doesn't even appear in the Ant-Man Legacy in the comic book. So I don't quite know why he was actually in there. But anyway, let's move on to a bit of Brechtian distanciation. A bit of Brechtian distanciation, where you start off a movie where it basically starts identifying that we're maybe watching a stage play. You may actually be sort of stuck in a stage play as opposed to anything else from that point of view. But it's all about stories. And let's face it, if you've got Florence Pugh playing a nurse who served in the Crimea, just like Florence Nightingale. See what they did there? Oh, yes, genius. Florence Pugh, Florence Nightingale, over in Ireland, of course, post-famine, to actually deal with the wonder. Well, where do you go? Possibly get Toby Jones in, or maybe Richard Fitzwilliams. Over to you, Richard.
It's not your job to question us. You are here only to watch.
The watch is to last 2 weeks. We are proposing 8-hour shifts.
There is to be no conferring between the two of you.
On the 14th day, you will each present your separate testimony.
May I ask, gentlemen, no one has told me what precisely is wrong with the girl.
Anna O'Donnell doesn't eat.
How long exactly has it been since the last time the girl ate?
4 months.
That's impossible. Thumbs up and eyes wide open. Are you nervous at all?
Why should I be nervous?
Do you know the dangers of a prolonged fast, Anna?
I don't eat sweets. I live a manna from heaven.
And how does that feel?
Full.
Anna is in danger.
She's an actress.
She's chosen.
Are you feeling well in yourself, Anna?
Very well, Father. Thank you.
What right does a stranger have to come between a child and his people?
I'm here to find out the truth.
I am begging you, you must stop the watch.
It was a terrible mistake to bring a nurse here, an English nurse.
Sprint, sleep.
Will you help me?
This precious blood You don't understand us. Forgive me. Anyone can be chosen.
Yes, I thought that this was an interesting film. And yes, the first sequence, it's quite disconcerting. It's a film set, and then you're introduced to a character as a narrator who talks about the power of stories and the belief in them. At the centre of this movie, it's set in 1852, the long shadow of the Great Famine in Ireland, which the Irish correctly, I think, I fear, blame on the English. Florence Pugh plays Tib Wright. She's an English nurse who served in the Crimea, and she's summoned by a self-appointed committee in a village in Ireland. A young girl, Anna O'Donnell, played by Kyla Lord Cassidy, has miraculously, it seems, lived without food for 4 months. So the nurse is asked to keep an eye, a very, very close eye on what's happening, how is this possible, and so forth. And it's an interesting, Florence Pugh is a remarkable performance. It's a very, very interesting character. She drinks laudanum every night. She had been left by her husband, and her baby daughter died. And there are other curious details, for example, when she's in bed, she'll prick her finger until it bleeds, almost a sort of self-abuse. And the laudanum, of course, has an effect on her. And then there's Anna's mother.
Don't forget the two baby boots, Richard. Don't forget the two teeny tiny baby boots.
I mentioned her baby daughter died. As I say, a somewhat complex character. And Tom Burke, who was so excellent in Souvenir, a film I was especially fond of, plays William Byrne, an English journalist from the Daily Telegraph, who comes to report on this very, very strange phenomenon. How can someone live without food? What is really going on? And so we do discover this, and indeed the power of stories. And at the end, a particularly dramatic touch. A movie that's very, very unusual. There's no question that it's interesting, it's unusual. It is slow. I will say this. There are some good performances. You've got Toby Jones playing a local doctor. You've got Kieran Hines playing a local father. And you've got a girl who supposedly is being watched by Sister Michael, played by Josie Walker, and also by Tim. The facts simply, well, what are the facts? What's actually happening here? And what do the villagers want to happen? And what, in point of fact, do the
burn
nurse...
it down, Richard? Burn it down. That's what takes place. Burn it down.
We're not going to your spoilers, Alex, and shame upon you for mentioning a scene that, mentioned out of context, is completely useless information for anybody. And I'm
not a spoiler then.
I'm going to enlarge on the context of what happens there, but it is a dramatic climax, a film that, as I say, it is a bit slow, atmospheric, visually it's impressive, I thought. I think they're very good performances, and yes, I think that Florence Pugh is excellent. Tom Burke is always good. Variety of supporting casts, yes. So I'd say a movie I enjoyed. It's an unusual one, and certainly it's got an unusual beginning. The Power of Stories, oh, to be sure, it's quite a well-told story.
Not really in the same league as Gemma O'Donoghue's opening novel, of course, which was Room, which was all about a child with his mother locked into a whole range of traps, entrapments,
oh,
and so on.
Room was amazing. The film, I haven't read it.
Oh. Natasha, I would give this a 6 out of 10. It is a little bit turgid in places. It takes time. The end sort of wrap-up is actually sees the cast going off to your country in many ways.
Please not have a spoiler here, because I can see your face is live with mischief. I can see the danger, and no. I'm... Everyone.
No, Florence Pugh is the latest Black Widow, so it ties back to Navalny, really. So it's all good.
Think you should be muted.
Natasha.
I love Florence Pugh. I think she's an amazing actress. I think
don't
she's
worry,
got
darling.
A great range. I think exactly. I think that I don't mind if something is a slow burn, as long as something is worth it. Now that's the toss up, and I suppose that's something I'm only going to find out when I watch it myself. Can it keep me enthralled even when it's slow? Because if I'm wanting to start looking around, or if my mind's phasing in and out and I'm not immersed, then it's lost me, and I'm not interested. So on the initial premise, and from what Richard has described, it sounds very interesting and it sounds very good, but I just hope that when I'm watching it, I am my attention is kept and it's not too slow.
I would have thought yes.
If only she'd gone to mass with the rest of the tech company, all would have been well. But anyway,
Alex, I'm nervous about you dealing with the story of this. You're simply not capable of restraining yourself.
Please. Jessica, you're in the country that The Wonder is based. Will you be going to see it, or will you be accessing it through Netflix?
I'd like to support a theater over Netflix, I think, if I can. So, but I feel
it's
like
a Netflix movie, though.
It. Yeah, I feel like it'd be fun to go out and see it somewhere if they're like showing it. Maybe as it gets warmer, I think Dublin might do some film events. But I feel like I have to go see it. If it's set here, I have to. And I do like historical films. I think they're always interesting to me. Even if not for the plot, I love just the costume decisions, the film decisions, the locations, seeing where they filmed. So I think there's always a lot in historical movies to look at.
I agree totally. I'm fascinated by them. Mm. So long, of course, we don't know the plot. I'm not told by irresponsible people.
I don't know to whom you could be referring to on that one, Richard. It has to be pointed out that the fact I gave Navalny a 10 does actually break one of my fixed rules, because as people know, I'm never a great fan when you actually see shots of bodily functions on screen. And even Navalny actually has a shot of a Russian soul basically relieving himself against a graffiti-clad wall halfway through the system. And I thought then this could go either way. Thankfully, it didn't. So, you know, there we are. CNN obviously feeling as though they have to put in those particular aspects of life as well. Richard, what was your score for The Wonder? Was it a 7?
Actually, I haven't given a score, but yes, I think, yes, 7. It's a good film, but it is slow. Yes, it's atmospheric.
Yeah, you see, I would be sort of more thinking about a 6, really. But, you know, again, okay and reasonable. So a few moments still remain. People are actually saying, where's Sarah Huntley? She's doing various other things. Also, where's Kathy Manso? Well, she apparently tried to get in, but hasn't been able to get in. So, you know, that's part and parcel of the whole rich tapestry. So what would you like to share with us about the art world, Richard, in terms of where you've actually been catching things up recently, specifically with the Hispanic exhibition at the Royal Academy?
Yes, it's rather interesting. This is specifically, whilst the building's being refurbished, treasures from the Hispanic Society Museum. Founder is Archer M. Huntington, and it's American-based. And there are antiquities and various decorative arts and artifacts from Spain and from its former colonies in Latin America. Now, of course, this is an absolutely enormous ground to cover hundreds of years. And so obviously, that's one particular collection. You do have to be aware of that. And you do have to also, and I have a warning here about Madonnas. I don't know if anyone has a particular interest in them, but so far as I'm concerned, I do find vast numbers of them, and we'll also come to this when we talk about Donatello, which is just opened at the Victoria and Albert Museum. I do find vast numbers of them a bit tricky, I have to be honest. But yes, it is interesting. You follow Spain from the period, well, the early period, and then way the Moors are driven out, so it ceases to be multicultural, and then Spain expands and becomes a colonial power. There's some very good Velasquez There's also Goya. The Goya has pride of place in the exhibition under the rotunda. There is the Duchess of Alba. It's a portrait Goya was particularly fond of, which I have to admit is a great admirer of Goya. I am especially resistant to, for some reason. It just doesn't appeal to me. That is there. There's some El Grecos. There are some ancient maps, including a 1526 world map by Vespucci, which I did find absolutely fascinating. And then you've got the conquest of Latin America, which was a pretty, really brutal suppression of indigenous cultures to the point that, I mean, the takeover of Christianity was total. And the indigenous work was, it was usually a copy of the European. It really was completely eliminated. It's pretty sad.
If you're going to do genocide, Richard, you've got to do it properly. You know, actually go for the whole thing. These are the things that people often forget. You know, if it's going to be sort of an act, you can't just pitter patter around the edges here.
Well, they, you know, Alex, a previous spirit, which may be linked to you in some form, may have been alive at the time. Who knows? I can only say that you just basically get the dominant culture is all there is, and that's what we see. It is interesting. It comes down to Sorolla, who I've become a great admirer of. Indeed, I never knew of him in early years until I started going quite frequently to Madrid, and his work is rather fascinating. Merit, well, I would call him impressionist, but there's a mix here. There isn't very much contemporary work. There's no abstract work, or very little. It covers a huge amount of ground, but it covers far too much, but it's just a collection, and as such, it's of interest, but I wouldn't say especially. I mean, it's worth seeing, but I've been a couple of times, and it certainly wasn't full, but it is, you know, the Spanish culture and the way it was disseminated, with some of the pretty terrible things that happened. I think...
There you go. The Hispanic Exhibition at the Royal Academy. Natasha, would you be checking that out?
It's interesting because it's not something that I know an awful lot about historically. I love history and I love museums, and it's not a period that I've seen a lot of. I think, as Richard very articulately expressed, I think, like him, I would be frustrated with the lack of sort of indigenous items from the colonial period. I think seeing, you know, as you say, the lack of representation there would probably frustrate me quite a lot. But it, you know, to see once and to pass an afternoon, I would be interested to see, because, as I say, it's always a chance to expand your knowledge.
And Jessica?
I think it'd be interesting to see. I think I'm interested to see if they would include like modern indigenous art that's made by indigenous people right now. No, there's none.
Huntingdon was not an aficionado of contemporary work, so there isn't. It comes down to Sorolla, who is relatively recent, but there is relatively little in that section. It's more a cross set. It is an individual collection, but it's not an exhibition that's been curated intending to be balanced out, because, I mean, there's a special room in there dedicated to Goya, which makes it abundantly clear that Velázquez is, for example, or El Greco, not considered at that level. But, I mean, as an individual collection, you know, it's been collected by this one individual and that it's been built up. So, generally quite interesting.
Well, there we have it, all sorted out. I mean, one's tempted to actually say it could be manna from heaven for various reasons. And there is a huge spoiler I can actually give, which actually involves that line about manna from heaven and the wonder. But I'm not. So, you know, I don't know why that sort of line would actually come through. But, you know, it is interesting in terms of how that develops. For the moment, Jessica Burtis, Natasha Wanton and Richard Fitzwilliams, keep on keeping on. Let's go down that yellow brick road.
Thank you. What do you think you'll do then?